Nothing about Ryan Spiro Green's childhood in a trailer park in southeastern Virginia would suggest that one day he would grow up to become an opera singer. The neighborhood was a hotbed of violence and crime, and Ryan's home wasn't safe either. When he was 12 years old, Ryan landed in a juvenile detention center. And then he would defy all the odds by winning the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions. Daniel Bergner details the years between Ryan's struggles and his success in his latest book called Sing for Your Life, A Story of Race, Music, and Family. It's published by Little Brown. I'm very pleased that it brings Ryan Spiro Green and Daniel Bergner to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks, Leonard. It's great to be here.
And when did you first hear Ryan sing?
I heard him in the semifinals of the Metropolitan Opera Contest 5.5 years ago, heard that rich, velvety voice, and then started to learn his unforgettable story.
Did you always have a deep voice, Ryan, when you were a kid?
No, I started off as a tenor before I hit puberty.
Mm. So how much of what we hear today is the result of a lot of hard work and training?
Everything.
I'm going to jump in and say that is almost an understatement. When Ryan first began training, and I've talked to his teachers from way back, I came to this pretty raw and came to the Met's own training program quite raw, and has really, I've been side by side with him in those sessions and has worked relentlessly to take that natural talent and turn it into an exquisite operatic voice.
Did you uncover details about Ryan's life and his family's life that even he didn't know when you were researching this book?
Well,
Ryan, you're nodding your head yes, so yeah, obviously
yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
I'll speak a little bit about that, and then Ryan can fill in the details. Just to give you one example, because that time of being locked up was so painful, neither Ryan nor his mom remembered the details of where he was sent. Through some journalistic good luck, we found out. We got the 500-page logbook, which chronicled his time there every 15 minutes. And I still vividly remember that logbook getting sent to Ryan at the Metropolitan Opera, his walking up to me with that giant box saying, I've looked at this a little bit. It's really hard to read. You take it. You read it. Ask me what you need to.
It was hard to read because it brought back so many painful memories?
Yeah. The person I am today is so different from the 12-year-old child that I was back then. And one of the first things I did when I got out was put all of my bad memories, all of my emotions sort of somewhere really, really far behind me, and I'd only look forward from then on.
Do you think that being sent to the detention center actually turned out to be a good thing, despite the fact that none of us would want to go through that?
Well, honestly, the percentage-wise, I'm a fluke. I shouldn't have been as successful as I am.
But you did go back to show the kids what can happen.
Yeah, I did. It was due to the opportunities provided from Daniel, first of all, connecting with people who were involved with children in my certain situation. We were able to connect with the facility's director, and I was allowed to go back and speak to them and sing for them and let them know that there's a life after this.
And why were you sent to the detention center?
I was sent to detention center because of my behavior, and I had an episode where I threatened my family's life, and from there I was sent.
Because you were so angry?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of violence or a lot of anger and hostility in your home. Where was your father? Most of the problems were with your mother.
Yeah, me and my mother's relationship is a complicated one. And, we're working through it. And, yeah, I love her. She loves me.
Mm-hmm. You had an older brother who also was creative. What happened with him?
He sort of followed the same path as I did and ended up in juvenile detention and stayed much longer than I did. And then got out and eventually ended up back in jail.
Wasn't one of your rewards for good behavior at the detention center to be able to listen to the radio? What were you listening to? Obviously not opera.
Well, at the time, I had no idea what opera was. And I think it was probably one of the first moments that I realized that maybe I was interested in music. And it was a place where I could get away, a place that was I don't know the word.
But you were already thinking about singing?
No. No, I was not a singer, and nor did I think I would ever be one at that time.
Daniel, what part of Ryan's history did you start with?
Well, I started piecing together as I first met Ryan and then met with his mom and met with old teachers, family members, friends. Just the difficulty of that background. I remember traveling down to southeastern Virginia to the town of Suffolk, where his mom still called home when Ryan was in the process of winning that contest. And, I mean, it was literally barely more than a shack right across the street from a drug dealer's headquarters. You know, this was tough, tough circumstances that Ryan, through very inspiring teachers, but also, and this is impossible to overstate, through sheer will, managed to transcend.
Was it difficult to gain the trust of Ryan's family members? You write about spending a fair amount of time with his mother, Valerie. Do you think she understood the power of sharing his story?
I think everyone understands the power of Ryan's story. I mean, this is just a testament to human will and a testament to what intervention at the right time can accomplish. And it's just also what maybe listeners can't see, but I felt right away was just the radiance of this person. I mean, to put this really simply, every afternoon, every evening I spent with Ryan was a day that I was going to feel better at the end of.
I'm speaking with Daniel Bergner, who has written a book called Sing for Your Life, a story of race, music, and family, about Ryan Speedo Green, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, wow. That's just because I have floaters and sometimes words disappear when I look at them. How do you reconcile the most troubled parts of your life with where you are today? Do you see moments where you cross certain lines?
As I mentioned before, like the person that I was when I was 12 is a far different person than I am now, and I think honestly the things I overcame helped me become the person I am today.
Well, we normally don't think of a kid who makes good after going through this kind of thing as going into opera. There are a lot of other areas you might have gone into. How did you wind up discovering opera?
I got into a program, Governor School for the Arts in Norfolk, Virginia, and they take a trip every other year to New York City. And so my first trip to New York City was with the school, and I saw my first opera, Carmen.
What was it? Carmen?
Yeah. What made it so special was that the person who was performing it was African-American, and till then, I never thought that opera was something that a person who looked like me could do. And when I saw Denise on stage, I felt like every emotion you could feel on the emotional spectrum. And she was, you know, so seductive, and you know, she had comedic moments, and it made it tangible to me. It made the idea of becoming an opera singer tangible. And I got to meet her afterwards because of Mr. Brown, Mr. Fisher, the two teachers who knew her. And she treated me like I was her best friend's son or her nephew, and took pictures with me, called me her boo, and I fell in love with opera at that moment. And I left the Metropolitan Opera that night, and I was talking to Mr. Brown, and I told him, you know, I want to sing at the Metropolitan Opera. This is what I want to do. And it was the first time I had a dream and spoke it aloud.
And you are sing at the Met. In fact, You have been appearing in the new production of La Boheme in a role that really doesn't require you to be of one race or another.
Yeah, I mean, now luckily now it doesn't. For a long time,
that just was not this, you're one of the friends.
Yeah, exactly. We're it's you know, La Boheme's a story about love and art in Paris, you know, and yeah. So I'm one of the four friends who are enjoying life don't have much money. We're just enjoying the Paris in the period that it takes place.
What was the more difficult part? Training your voice and getting it to a point where you could sing on this level, or learning the languages? You're singing this in Italian. I suspect you didn't study Italian in school.
I did study Italian in school.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, in undergrad and graduate school. I went to University of Hartford, and I went to Florida State University, they helped me a lot. But at the going from college to the Metropolitan Opera is a huge leap, and there's a lot of fine tuning that has to happen in between, and that's what the Metropolitan Opera's Young Artist Program did for me. Is they helped me catch up my artistry with my voice.
Well, I would assume that most of the roles available to somebody with your vocal range would be in Russian.
A majority of operas are in Italian, but there are operas in almost every major language, from French to Czech to even there are operas in Mandarin even.
Hmm.
So I do sing
for
in Russian.
For bass baritones.
Yeah, for basses and bass baritones, and we play kings, fathers, and bad guys. So there's almost every chance to do that.
Does it bother you that the heroes are usually tenors and that the bad guys are usually bassos?
I mean, I've come to terms with it. I think honestly, it's much harder to play a bad guy than it is to play a good guy. And when you get, you know, I dream of that moment going on stage to take my bow, and everyone's booing me, not because I was bad singing, but because I was so bad that they can't applaud.
You were named as one of eight finalists from an initial applicant pool of 1,200. Then you were given a week to prepare for a final performance. How did you prepare? You must have been nervous.
I was. I was incredibly nervous, and it's one of the reasons why the book Sing for Your Life is so great, because it talks about the period of that week and how stressful it was and how much I had to put into just to be passable for the final performance.
You say that you felt so nervous that you felt like your body was vanishing.
Yeah, I did. It's the Metropolitan Opera National Council audition is the biggest opera competition in the United States for the next up and coming Met singers, like potential Met performers, and the singers come from for the greatest colleges all over the world.
Did winning the competition do anything to affect your relationship with your family?
It helped. You know, I barely grew up seeing my father, and he promised me if I made it to the Met Finals that he would come see me in New York City and sing at the Met, and he had never actually seen me sing opera till then.
How old are you? Because I've spoken to a number of great opera singers who say that it takes a while for voices to really mature to be able to sing on the highest level.
Excuse me. I'm 30 years old, mm-hmm. and one thing I want to really make known is that, for my voice type, I'm incredibly young, and I'm just at the beginning of my career. And even when I'm 35, I'll still be young for my voice type. And so I've only sang a very small amount of the repertoire that I'll sing in the future. And so I have a lot of exciting roles to be performing in the next couple of years.
Daniel, this is a bit of a departure, this book, for you. Your previous books would not have suggested that this would be a topic you'd be interested in.
Well, it's interesting. So the last two books were indeed about desire. So in that sense, it's a departure. But the books before that were very much about race, maximum security prison in Louisiana, and then Civil War in Sierra Leone. So in some ways, this is a return. But the big departure for me is, those were pretty despairing stories, and this one, for all the difficulty, all the wrenching difficulty, is tremendously uplifting.
As I mentioned, you're singing the role of Colleen at the Met's current production of La Boheme. When's your next performance?
My next performance is Thursday.
And you also, I hear, are going to be at the Green Space, WMIC's Green Space, this Wednesday. What's that event going to be like?
Since I've never done it before, I can't tell you.
But you know what you'll be singing?
No, I do not.
We're going to actually be talking with Rebecca Carroll partly about race. So I'm really interested. This will be a chance to talk about the aspects of the book and the aspects of Ryan's story and sort of our conversations over the last years that have really gone deeply into race.
And race has been an issue in opera for a while. I remember when Leontine Price first came on the scene with that glorious voice, and yet people said that it wasn't a good voice for opera.
Yeah, I mean, I can say that even today, like, there are preconceptions that happen when African-American singers are auditioning or are singing on stage. And even though we don't necessarily know that we have them, like, even the idea of you see a 300-pound, 6'5" black man walk into an audition and you immediately think, oh, okay, well, probably his diction's not going to be so good as you said earlier, or, you know, maybe he'll have a gospel sound mm-hmm. to his voice instead of the classically the idea of what classical singing sounds like. And these are all preconceptions that happen, and they're subtle, but they affect casting. They affect how people hear a singer before they even hear them, how they perceive that they're going to hear him or her.
When you went back to the juvenile detention facility to speak with the kids, what did you tell them?
Oh, boy. It was an incredibly emotional experience, and so half the time I feel like I was probably in tears or just stunned by what I was seeing and what I was hearing. But I told them that this is not the end. Like, I was here too once, and that, you know, that it's
we understand what you're saying, and I've run out of time, but we have a link for tickets to Ryan Speedo Green and Daniel Bregner's event at the Green Space this Wednesday night at 7. It's on our show page at wmyc.org/lowpate, as well as a video of his singing from La Boheme. The book Sing for Your Life is published by Lee Boudreau Books, a division of Little Brown. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leonard.